Welcome to the Subscription League, a podcast by Purchasly. Listen to what's working in subscription apps. In each episode, we invite leaders of the app industry who are mastering the subscription model for mobile apps. To learn more about subscriptions, head to subscriptionleague.com. Let's get started.
Welcome, everybody. Today, I have the pleasure to interview Belén Carrillo, VP of Product at Babbel. And to help me today, I have Jeff Grung, co-founder at Purchasly. Jeff, can you introduce Belén for us?
Yeah, I'm very, very pleased to welcome Belén in this subscription league. So Belén is the VP of Product at Babbel, where she leads the product team, building new teacher-led products like Babbel Live that we're going to talk today about. Prior to Babbel, Belén led the international rollout of SoundCloud's monetization options. She was also involved in the early stage development of other online companies in the entertainment and ticketing industries. Originally from Argentina, now based in Berlin, Belén will share with us today her amazing journey at Babbel, especially building a subscription product from scratch while it already failed twice. Welcome, Belén.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here.
Is there anything you want to add to this great intro from Jeff?
No, I think if people just remember the name and Babbel, we're doing a great job.
You're good to go. All right.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Babbel Live actually is?
Yeah, of course. Babbel Live is a virtual group classes service. So for us, it's a way to enhance our language learning ecosystem and give language learners the opportunity to get conversational and really practice their speaking as fast as possible.
Cool. So if people Google you today, they'll find a presentation using on product marketing at the Product Marketing Summit. Can you tell us a bit more about what product marketing is and how you apply it?
Yeah. To me, product marketing is a discipline that is meant to enhance how more traditional product development has worked. The point here is to bring a product market fit angle to how we are filtering ideas and how those ideas are presented to the customer. So being very specific, a good product marketeer should bring a competitive research knowledge that perhaps the product manager, the UX researcher don't fully have the time to dive into, specifically parts of the industry that might not be direct competitors, but players who are relevant and can be adjacent to what you're developing. The most important part for me in the ideation phase, a product marketeer should ensure that you're not just choosing a solution to a problem that is, you know, effort, impact, good to build, but that it also brings a product differentiation point so that when you're in the rollout phase and you're communicating about this new feature, you actually have something to use to make the user perceive the difference between you and your competitor to drive that feature adoption much better.
Awesome. The thing that really resonates with me here is having the marketing team present throughout the lifecycle and at the end and being able to communicate on those new features, because I've seen so many teams that don't do that. So it's really nice. Babbel's latest offering is Babbel Live, which is different from the offering that it had in the past and the traditional language learning app. Can you tell us more about the journey to create and launching this offering?
It feels so far away. It was only been like a year and a half or so. I think it was a combination of starting with the right talent, being very, very, I don't want to use the word brutal, but like serious about either figuring this out or failing as quickly as we could. And then I think there was also a combination of right place, right time, because we were launching a live tutoring solution at the time of a global pandemic where we had the pleasure of having almost all of the world introduced to Zoom without having to do any onboarding, for example. So yeah, we were bringing the right talent. We were bringing the right mindset to how to build a product quickly. And we were in a right point in the market, which, you know, sometimes when you innovate, you can't really control.
And from our last conversation, you said that was the third attempt at launching Babbel Live. Can you tell us what changed in that third attempt that really made a difference?
Yes. So basically, I mean, our first attempt was a try to build everything ourselves. You know, we were trying to build a video call feature that both teachers and learners were using. We were trying to build a teacher interface where the teacher would find everything they needed. Yeah, also like the learner journey and how the learner was being recommended from place to place. And this ended up being a massive undertaking. It's not so much that we didn't have the right talent to do it or that this was difficult. It's just that it prevented us from getting to a first MVP quickly. And then it was also this big mammoth thing that it was hard to iterate on. So any one of those cycles of learning what was not working and coming back to refining would take 3 to 4 months. And ultimately, yeah, it made us much slower at validating. The second time around, we were like, okay, this it's not going to happen. Our much leaner product development approach, we're going to third-party integrate everything that's possible. Just build what we're expert on, didactical content catalog and the learning journey with which we help learners build a habit and stay motivated. But we chose the challenging product proposition, which was private one-on-one tutoring. There's companies out there doing this and doing it well, so it's certainly possible. It's just that for us at that time, given that the market of one-on-one classes is much smaller, our ability to validate purchase intent, to create a critical mass of users was low and was slower. So we were finding a lot more challenges on the validation part, which were not enabling us to move into the next step of what we were trying to build. And so comes the third time, and we pivoted our proposition to group classes, which are cheaper for the consumer, leaner in the sense that they have better unit economics for us. The costs can be, you know, diluted by a number of students rather than one student bearing all of them. And we were also very ready and I think more experienced with integrating out-of-the-shelf solutions for the video part, the scheduling part, the management of freelancers, and all of that enabled us to focus on creating an outstanding classroom experience, which is what has brought us to right now tens of thousands of learners coming back on a monthly basis to use Babbel Live.
I'm curious, you said, you know, in the first attempt, you guys try to do everything yourself. And the second attempt, you kind of changed that approach. How difficult was that to get the team to go along with that change?
I guess because at this third time, it was very clear what we were doing. Those team members that we brought in were very much kept in the loop of what this approach was. We took, I think, also from a maybe cultural perspective as a team, we said we kept a very frank dialogue with our engineers, with our designers, with our product managers, in the sense of not promising that this was going to be something long lasting forever and ever, but that we were here for 9 months to either prove or disprove that we could do this. And so everyone was navigating without having to stress the role. Everyone was clear on, we've got a short time to do this. We're going to sacrifice left, right, and center and say the more fancy side of designing or product development of all of that will come, but will come if we're able to take this couple of milestones that we've set for ourselves. So it was I think, a way of like carrot and stick, motivate people to be like, if we're really good at this, if we actually get to a critical mass, then we're going to be gifted with more resources, an entire year of actually building the type of product that we're all dreaming about.
Yeah, it really sounds like you took like the startup approach. It's not because we have tons of resources that we should reinvent the wheel and do everything. It's awesome.
I have a question about that, because you failed or you attempted twice. What made you think that you could succeed the third time that you tried it? And if ever you had failed on that attempt, would you have tried another time? I mean, because you can keep on trying and trying and trying over and over again without succeeding. So we understood that the recipe that you chose was different and that, the product marketing you were speaking in the very beginning of this interview probably made a huge difference in how you approach the problem. What was the initial thoughts on you keep on trying a third time on that topic that you already had covered twice?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that the main difference was that we were observing a market that was evolving in the space of online tutoring. Back at that time, when I'm telling you about, like, you know, the first attempt, we were building a number of different products. We were doing a test certificate solution with Cambridge. We were doing some other spin-offs of products. We've built a traveling language solution where you can actually come in, book a language travel course with us and perhaps go to Mexico and have everything in the package done. Those are products that we have paused for the moment because mainly we have understood that the market is not ready to receive them. Right now, you know, we paused our travel product at the time of the pandemic where virtually everyone was at home. For this product, it was the opposite, right? We were seeing that we might have failed, but actually more and more competitors were popping out in the market with a valid proposition and growing their market share. So it had to be about the approach we were taking to building and not about this service not being interesting for users. So then we came back to observe that and say, okay, if this is not about the market is actually hungry for such a solution. What have we done wrong in the past on our approach? And that's why we came up with like the type of proposition we're putting into market and the type of execution that we were following.
And so when you came out with Babbel Live, I guess the third time around, you came in the market with some established competitors. How did that factor in the project?
We took, I think, the positive side of that. And I think that being an established company, you know, more than 12 years in the market, we were in a position to have easy access to resources to do that. And normally you have an idea, you study the competition and it's seen as a drawback. that you have all of these people doing what you want to do. However, if you know how to play it, it can also be extremely valuable because it tells you exactly where you have to go and what not to do. It hints you what proposition work, it gives you a baseline for pricing, which is really good because then it's kind of like playing poker. You know, you're seeing the cards of the other one and you know your numbers, you know how low you can go. And then you're coming later into that bet.
I like the metaphor.
Yeah. It's like you have to position yourself, but you're coming at the time where you're seeing what everyone's game is. It happens the same thing with messaging. As a marketeer, you always look at what is the brand positioning and narrative of different competitors, and you can use that as a way to compare or differentiate yourself, which is also something that we did, right? We researched competitors, understood how they were messaging, what were their unique selling points, and we saw a lot of overlap. Most of them were talking about classes that fit your schedule, do it in your own time and pace, qualified native teachers, the concept of, you know, a teacher is good when he's native. And so we came to our side and we said, okay, let's make sure that we're building a product that has differentiators to this. What we say about our teachers, which is also something that I hope you can all try and validate when using it, is that our teachers are invested in your success. And we have built the tools to make sure that we train them consistently and we give them the resources to actually be the most engaging teachers in a class so that they can feel much more like a fitness instructor or someone like a fitness coach that is going to motivate you through it than just a language teacher. We give you access to the entire Babbel app, lessons, podcasts, games, things that are going to complement that language learning ecosystem, which is something that competitors don't have. And we make sure that our classes are about cultural immersion. You go always beyond grammar and vocab. You learn about the idiosyncrasies of a given country. You learn French and you learn more than just how it's done in France. You learn about the Francophone countries around the world and how their culture has evolved. And so we now have a much more differentiated proposition on things that we've been able to validate. These are important for the people that use the product.
I gotta say, I'm sold. I say I'm gonna start learning Spanish again. I gotta start that again.
Yeah, and we have great teachers. I genuinely, this is something that I always say, and then people come back and they're in love with one or another.
Oh, that's awesome. To come back to that third attempt, it was already also pretty fast. Like it was under a year, if I remember correctly. Can you share some of the tools and strategies you used to validate and get to market this fast?
Yeah, as a team, I really have to say, like, we weren't sure that we could do this. People at a big company are always coming to a next project with, you know, a fancy set of slides and this feeling of like, look, there's a budget for it. I just need to proceed and execute. We were like, we've got no clue, actually, whether we're going to waste everyone's time for about 10 months. So for us, the most important thing was that we had very clear predictors of failure. And we set ourselves to define what are the most important things that we need to answer before we go into market, so that when we go into market, we don't completely fail. The other problem could have been having something that half works, has a mixed feedback, qual was wrong, A/B testing was good. So you're kind of like, meh, and you decide to go to market anyways, and then you have a disaster. So we're like, okay, that's not happening. We need to be able to answer, can we build this thing? Do people even want it? Like, sure, I've made this drawing. Does anyone want to look at my drawing? And then are people willing to pay for it? Because it's very fun and easy when things are for free, right? And then we took this very OKR-y approach to attaching a metric and a threshold to each and one of those questions and making sure from the beginning that we could measure those things. So data for us was very relevant at the start, even if we didn't have a lot of functions. We started a team with a product analyst and a UX researcher from the get-go, even when there wasn't a product manager and a designer just yet.
Nice, nice, nice. You know, you mentioned something very, very true. It's nice if your project can either completely fail or widely succeed. It's tough when you're in the middle and you don't really know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, speaking of which KPIs did you set to tell whether or not it was a success?
So at the start, our ambition was to build a product that could both serve B2B and B2C audiences. There was a clear case for us of this becoming a B2B product. We had a bunch of companies working and using Babbel telling us, can you please give me classes? So what greater place to be in when you're building something than having already the customers at your door? So we started with three B2B companies who we told them, we're going to give you something for free. It's going to be ugly. You need to be patient with us. You need to let us have this ugly thing that we're going to give you for free. And it's great quality in learning, but it might not look fancy. And so that kind of we built this thing with the first 3 month phase of reaching at least 60 learners without having this product break. having about 60 learners, 6 different recurrent classes, and 6 teachers using the product ongoingly for a couple of months. Once we got to that, we said, or prior to that, but what we had defined is like, that's the minimum of having a prototype. We didn't even call it a prototype. It was like, the prototype works. Second, we wanted to move it to a beta that we connect to our web app. And the point there was to start solving all of these integration questions. Sure, we had integrated some third-party solutions. Can this thing now that we're starting to create be connected to the Babbel infrastructure? Our web app, our mobile apps, are things going to break in the process? We had the goal, our metric there was to have at least 3,000 Babbel subscribers using the product on a recurring basis. So it wasn't just enough with having 3,000 people coming in once, but we wanted at least 3,000 people that were coming to study on a monthly basis for free. I think we got to about 5,000 by the time that we said, okay, third point, which is, are people willing to pay for this? We agreed that a good conversion rate was what we could be seeing in the rest of our marketing channels, which was a 2 to 3% of total traffic. So we said from everyone who's using this product monthly, we are validating that people want to pay this if we get 2 to 3% of them paying for it. So we did a payments test at that time. We didn't develop our full subscription functionality, but we had a one-time payment where people who were getting 4 classes for free a month could have the option of buying a 5th or a 6th one for a certain amount of money. We got there too. And then we got really scared because we were like, oh, damn, now we need to launch this thing. And it's really half done. And how we're going to, you need to imagine, like, we were dreaming about making this product better, adding filtering functionality and an onboarding system and visualization of the curriculum that would be much more intuitive. And yeah, we've just been having to do that through our first year in market.
Yeah, that's very interesting to see for such a big company with a high quality products, etc., that is settled in the landscape for quite a while. You didn't fear of launching something that was kind of dirty. So this is really a small startup approach of things. And it's great to see that you weren't afraid of adopting such a behavior for that new product.
Yeah, I for me, like, I've actually learned that this is the only way.
And so you've hinted a little bit in your answer to your previous question at how your subscriptions have evolved through your experimentations. Can you tell us a bit more from that first subscription that, or purchase, I guess, that you mentioned earlier, all the way to your current offering today?
Yeah, I think two things stood out as learnings, and I hope whoever has a subscription is taking notes, because I certainly was like, oh God, this is great learning. I'm going to take whatever else I go next. One was around simplifying the proposition for learners. And the second was around not using free trial. And I know there's a lot of free trial fans out there. So I'll contextualize that. The first one, we understood through qual interviews of people going through the entire acquisition flow. So a diary study of 7 days where we put a number of learners going through the entire process of purchasing and in a first week of using the product, that there was a huge cognitive overload when they were getting to the price page. They had to decide the intensity and duration of commitment to this new product for something that is actually, not 10 euros, a bit more expensive. It's not expensive with regards to the value you get, obviously, but it's a bigger decision than if you are just, buying a coffee in the street. And so at that time, we had our pricing structure was 5 classes a month, 10 classes a month, 20 classes a month for a given price. And people were having a hard time answering, well, how long do I need to be paying for this to get to my proficiency level? And when we understood that blocker, we came back to and designed a pricing positioning that would simplify the choice. We told our users, you have unlimited access to the product. You can use as much classes as you want. Just commit to a duration. And so we simplified the choice there. And also we made it clear for them within the funnel and price page, how long do you need to do depending on the intensity that you commit to? So users would have that information in front. I had a very funny case on an interview to a user that I was listening to where this person was telling us, look, you think I'm just deciding about your product, but at the same time that I'm buying this, I'm choosing whether I'm putting this money on a present for my girlfriend. I've been meaning to buy a new yoga mat. And I really, like, these are the things that I have in my head while I'm choosing for your product. And I was like, of course, like, how are we going to convince you if you have, like, all this information to parse through when you're buying? And then, look, about free trial, I hope that everyone working within a subscription B2C environment is going a bit deeper into whether this works for their industry or not. what I've learned comparing SoundCloud, where I was working, versus Bubble, is that subscriptions work very well for short-term length subscriptions, 1 month or so, and also for this very recurrent, I sort of like implement in my life type of products. I think an Uber subscription would work fantastically, something like Spotify, something like Strava, or a running app that you use on an ongoing basis. For premium products, it actually often dilutes your conversion. It gives the user 2 moments to actually churn out of what they're doing. And the reason for this is not that we're trying to lock you into a payment and have you not leave, but it's simply that you cannot experience the full value of the service in just 7 days or in just a free trial. For a language learner to get to the point of, oh, this is actually really helpful, they need a couple of weeks with the product. And we need to get them to a point of activation that just doesn't always happen in a free trial. So for us, it might actually mean that people use it, don't get convinced, and drop it before they've reached the point where this is actually interesting.
Yeah, because the shortest offering is what, a month, 2 months on Babbel?
Yeah.
We're kind of scratching the surface right here about how it's different to sell a Babbel Live subscription compared to what you were selling at Babbel. Just to give some information for our listeners that might not know the prices, I think Babbel Live is about $100 per month, right?
Yeah, the monthly subscription. If you actually commit to a bit longer, 3 months, it amounts to $80 a month. If you go for 6 months, you're already paying $70 a month.
Okay, and the Babbel regular app subscription is a monthly fee around 10, 15 bucks, right?
Yeah, so it's like 12 bucks if you're paying monthly, and then it also goes down a couple dollars per length of commitment.
So yeah, we understand that the service is very different. It's a high value. It's really valuable to have a teacher, a real teacher speaking to you and learning a language with you, with a small groups, etc. But still, it's a bigger commitment for any kind of users. And the same way that you were saying, well, free trial didn't apply to such a product. Can you share with us how it's different to sell, retain, well, in every KPIs that we follow on a daily basis on the subscription app, how it's different to sell a $10 or $15 subscription against a $100 subscription? Do you have anything to share in terms of KPIs about that?
Yeah, I think that on that same angle of why we don't use free trial, I mean, the idea here is to convince a user to buy a $100 product, you need to be sure that they understand the value. For a $10 or 10 euro product, you might be willing to do a leap of faith and first pay. And then if not, well, you lost $10. That doesn't happen in this kind of product. So what we have done is made sure that users have a way and a path towards activation that is as frictionless as we can. Specifically, we give 2 free classes to any Babbel lead or Babbel subscriber. As lead is how we call someone that is registered, you've created an account, but is not paying for a subscription just yet. And our point there is to say, if you have interest in this product, if you want to know more, check how booking a class looks like, how actually joining a class feels, what you get out of a class, you do it straight away. No commitments. We don't need to. We want you to get to a moment when you're like, these teachers are actually really awesome. And that is where we need you to be to look at the price. I actually would prefer much more that all of our potential customers would not get to the price page until they've joined the class. Because then you're looking at that amount with a context of the value, which before you don't have.
And how is the retention conversion compared to cheaper prices subscriptions?
It's early for us to say. If I'm really honest, I would say that, you know, retention is something that to fully understand that you need 1 year or 2 years of historic data to know how your product is doing. We had a target of about 10% lower retention than our, let's say, self-study app subscription, accounting for what you said. It's just simply a more expensive product and also one that you're very aware that you have and that you're committing to either using or not using. It was somewhat easy for us to reach that retention target of 10% less than our main app when we were a pricing which was created based. So you just commit to 10 classes a month, 20 classes a month, 30 classes a month. I think this was not due to the fact that the product was just amazing or the pricing was perfect, but more because we were acquiring users who were Babbel subscribers. Our natural acquisition was already segmented to high intent customers. This is why I'm saying I very honestly would want to see 2 years of data and tell you, where am I sitting on retention in month 24, where one of my levers to, you know, grow this to 100,000 learners is acquisition, and how are those retaining?
Yeah, of course, right now you're talking with your most engaged customers, so figures might change in the future.
Yeah. We're at a point where it's maybe like 65% and 60% old Babbel customers, 40% new ones. And we see that retention is healthy, but I don't have it all with me.
And are you considering any referral program, like people that are very satisfied with everything that you provide might share with their friends?
Yeah, we've got a long list of ways to add here. But yeah, in principle, yes. And the reason is because we want to make sure that our product growth and user acquisition is not just dependent on paid marketing. I think is where everyone's going in terms of making sure that you create a healthier, more product-led growth, a growth that can compound on the free assets that you have, which is critical mass of users, a value of a product, and so on.
Do you see any other trends around subscription? You just mentioned like making sure to potentially cross-sell and that kind of stuff. Is there other things that you see coming on the horizon for subscriptions?
Yeah, I mean, what I was mentioning, I think, is like how the whole area of acquisition is going to evolve over the next 5 years, right? We're going to be looking at much more organic and product-led growth to make sure that we are balancing how expensive paid marketing channels are getting. I think anyone working on the performance marketing side is very aware that we're not getting the same conversions and value out of every euro you put in the market. Every new banner impression and click is getting more expensive. And so I think the companies who are succeeding the most right now are those who are investing in diversifying their acquisition approach and investing in product-led growth. When it comes to subscription, I think the attention is also shifting much more in the other two, right? So if a subscription model is composed by acquiring those users, monetizing them, and retaining them, I think we're all also waking up to the idea that there's also two other legs. We could be looking at monetizing better, and we could be looking at retaining better. And these are accessible. I'm not going to say that it's easy to make them work well, but they are accessible. And marketing doesn't just have to look into acquisition as a way to generate revenue. On the monetizing side, you mentioned cross-sells. Anything that is, you know, a cross-sell, an upsell, or an add-on, you've done already the difficult part of, in the sea of universe of people out there, you've identified the one that's generally interested in your proposition. It's going to be easier for you to find adjacent propositions for that person, whether it's a one-time payment on something that is relevant for them at a given time. You know, fitness apps do this all the time with meal plans or one-on-one coaches. It will be easier for us in the future to find the power learners who are doing a bunch of classes on a monthly basis and sell them a one-on-one tutoring solution. So this approach, I think, is one that we're going to be taking much more because acquiring new users is getting much more expensive. And then retention strategies as well that are also proving to work across many industries. Term optimization is one of them. So moving your customers to longer term subscriptions, which we know equates to lower cancellations. You see a bunch of companies who for a long time were just a 1 month subscription moving into 6 months, 12 months. We reduce churn automatically when we do that. And yeah, Winback, I think, is also going to be a big part of, again, you know that Jeff was interested in language learning at some point, maybe back last year. He churned for some reason. It is likely easier for me to win him back into my product. That is going to be to find another Jeff out there.
Interesting. Those were all like great points that you made today. And those were all the questions that we had for you. So I really want to thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Belen.
Yeah, it was fun. Anytime.
Thank you. And we wish you the best for Babbel Live and all your initiatives at Babbel.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Purchasly team, thank you for listening to the Subscription League podcast. If you've enjoyed what you heard, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or other audio platform. To find out more about Purchasly and how we can improve your subscription business, visit purchasely.com. Please hit subscribe in your podcast player and don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to previous episodes at subscriptionleague.com. See you soon.